This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, May 24th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. It's a Monday, and you know what that means.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for
you. That's right. It's a Baggage Claim Monday. Taylor, I flew back from St. Louis early this morning, landed. One of the parking garages is messed up, and so we couldn't go there. So I had to go to a different parking garage, and I'm sitting in my car at Terminal B, overlooking a runway here at LaGuardia Airport, doing this podcast. What's going on with you?
Well, that sounds like a nicer view than you normally have. You're looking at the masses of unwashed humanity inside a concourse. So, you know, watching the planes go in and out, that's got to be a little bit therapeutic and nice to have your own space in the car. So this is actually, I think, an upgrade from where you're normally doing the show on a Monday morning.
Yeah, and it certainly sounds better, even though we got planes taking off and landing as we're doing the podcast today. You know what? You got the little private space here in the car, nice and silent, although I'm sure people walking by as they head off the flights are looking at the person sitting in the car, waving his arms, talking about baseball as being, you know, pretty strange. And by the way, I can see from where I'm sitting here, Citi Field, which is the home of Jacob deGrom, who is set to return from the injured list on Tuesday. He threw a side session Sunday, and if all goes well, and here's the really cool part, Taylor, if all goes well and everything stays in line, guess when his next start after that is? Sunday on Sunday Night Baseball against the Atlanta Braves. That would be a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Your love for Jacob deGrom. You get a lot of tweets saying, Buster, why do you hate the Mets? I don't think you hate the Mets, Buster, and you definitely love Jacob deGrom, so everyone needs to simmer down, and I'm excited that you'll get to watch him on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah, that thing goes in waves. You know, for years it was Padres fans. Some years it was Cardinals fans. They get upset. This year it's definitely Mets fans are upset. Pete Alonso went on the injured list the other day. Seven of the Mets opening day starters currently on the injured list, the lone exceptions being Francisco Lindor and James McCann. Big loss for the Cleveland Indians. Franmil Reyes is out 5 to 7 weeks because of an oblique strain. Let's get to the good stuff. Rangers and Astros played on Sunday, and one of the candidates for American League MVP did more damage.
The look to third, the 0-1. And this ball is hit back up the middle. Altuve dives. He has it. He throws home, but Solak slides across the plate, and Adolis Garcia has done it again. A sea of blue mobbing Garcia on the right side of the infield. He hit it just beyond Altuve, who had to leave his feet and make a diving stop. He was in no position to make a strong throw home, and Adolis Garcia provides yet another extra innings hit that gives Texas the win 3-2.
Former Cardinal farmhand Adolis Garcia having a monster season for the Texas Rangers. That sound from 105.3 The Fan. The Dodgers are rolling. They face the Giants, and Gavin Lux got it done again.
Pitch from DeSclafani, and Lux hits a high fly ball to center field, way back and gone. A grand slam for Lux. Oh, how do you like that? Gavin Lux clears the bases. A grand slam for Gavin Lux, and the Dodgers lead 10-0.
Tim Nevert, AM 570 LA Sports. The Padres are rolling as well since Fernando Tatis Jr. was activated from the injured list after testing positive for coronavirus. He's done nothing but hit, like in this situation, the bottom of the seventh on Sunday.
One ball, no strikes. Duggar kicks and deals, and this one's hit really well out to center field. Lewis going back, looking up, gonna go! Wow. Grand slam, Fernando Tatis Jr. He got it up over the bushes in front of the batter's eye, just to the left of straightaway center. The lead, 8-1 here in the seventh.
97.3 The Fan. During the Padres' current nine-game winning streak, the only two position players to appear in all nine games are Jake Cronenworth and Tommy Pham. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirchen coming up about the Dodgers and the Padres. The Rays are streaking as well. They face the Blue Jays.
From the belt. And delivering 0-2, Swing and a miss. He struck him out. The winning streak has reached 10 as the Rays, with four runs in the top of the ninth inning, have come back to defeat the Blue Jays by the final score of 6-4. It is now all alone the second longest winning streak in Rays franchise history.
That from 620 WDAE. The Cubs and Cardinals on Sunday Night Baseball, and home plate umpire Eric Bauckes had a rough, rough game. David Ross, the Cubs manager, had enough by the top of the fourth inning.
The pitch. And that's a strike on the outside corner. Bryant doesn't like the call. And those two former MVPs, Johnny Bench and Jackie Robinson. Uh-oh. Did David Ross just get ejected? I think he might have. And that last pitch to Chris Bryant was not a strike. And he's frustrated. And so David Ross out there and Eric Bauckes just looking at him.
That call from Boog Shambi, Chris Singleton on ESPN Radio. Yeah, he was screaming at him, David Ross, be better. Now, I'd say this. The Bauckes had a rough game, but when folks came out to challenge him or yell with him, for example, Javier Baez late in the game, he just sat there and took it, probably knew he wasn't having a great night. Bottom of the seventh inning, the Cardinals threatened, but here's what happened.
Tapera comes set. He kicks and delivers. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Base is loaded and nobody out, and the Cubs get out of it. The Cardinals leave them loaded. We head to inning number 8.
And because Javier Baez wasn't ejected during the course of this game for arguing, he was at the plate in the top of the 10th inning.
The 0-1 hammered center field. Going back is Bader. Back some more. Runs out of room and it's gone. Home run to center field, Javier Baez, and the Cubs strike first here in the 10th. A two-run homer to Dettaway Center, his 11th of the year, and it is 2-0 Chicago.
And the Cubs win this game, and probably Adam Wainwright was terrific, but the Cardinals just could not buy a hit with runners in scoring position. Now, before we get to Tim Kirkjian, and before we hear from Nolan Arenado and Tony La Russa, I want to tell you about this. Now streaming on ESPN Plus, The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Watch the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Also, keep up with all the NBA postseason action by listening to The Hoop Collective, The Woj Pod, The Low Post, and Jalen and Jacoby, wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkjian.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkjian covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, how you doing this week?
I'm well, Buster. I'm glad you're not at an airport, even though you're at an airport. You're not in a terminal. You're in your car. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, and ensure people passing, wondering what's going on, hearing a guy yell out loud about baseball. It's got to be unnerving. They're probably like herding their children away from the car as they pass.
Right.
All right. I wanted to ask you, last night on Sunday Night Baseball, it was an interesting experience. Adam Wainwright pitching for the Cardinals. And I want to say it was the second or third pitch of the game. And there was a ball that was thrown about two and a half inches outside. And Eric Backus, the rookie umpire, 30 years old, working behind the plate, called a strike. And it felt like, Tim, the entire trajectory of the game changed in that moment. And I, you know, credit to Matt Vasquez and Alex Rodriguez. They called it immediately. Like, if this umpire is giving that much off the outside corner, and you got Adam Wainwright on the mound, and you got Yadi Molina behind the plate, this is going to be a really interesting game. And it was one of the stranger games because of that strike zone last night. What did you see?
Well, it was a strange strike zone. Now, look, Buster, I have to preface with, I'm a big umpire guy. It's a really hard job. The average fan wouldn't last 10 pitches behind the plate before they would run away in fear and in danger. That's how hard it is to call balls and strikes. But he did not have a good night last night. And this is really mean. I would never do this. But last name Backus, of course, you remember Jim Backus, who played Mr. Magoo, who was the kind of the blind guy in the cartoons when I was growing up, and I'm way older than you, Buster, but people will mention that, sure, at some point. But it's really hard to call a big league game, but he missed some calls last night. And you're right, it changes the entire outcome of the game when the strike zone is different than the one that was yesterday and the one that's going to be perhaps tomorrow.
Yeah, and I tell you what, during the course of the game, and I covered the famous or infamous Eric Gregg game in 1997. I was working for the New York Times. Eric Gregg was the home plate umpire in a game between the Marlins and the Braves. And his strike zone that day, basically for right-handed hitters, it extended about 2 or 3 inches outside. But more importantly, for left-handed hitters, it was like it expanded out into the right-handed hitter's batter's box. And so you had the Braves with guys like Fred McGriff and I think it was Kenny Lofton, Chipper Jones. They had no chance. And Leon Hernandez was pitching for the Marlins. He did a great job with Charles Johnson of exploiting that strike zone, set a record for strikeouts. It was incredible. Well, we kind of had like a mini version of that last night to see all these major league hitters trying to adapt to that. There was a hit bat late in the game. Nolan Arenado was at the plate. And Tim, it was like he was diving across the plate in anticipation of the fact that he had to cover 2 or 3 extra inches off the outside corner. In the entire game, you had hitters turning and saying something. And like, really? That's how far we're going to go outside? And our friend David Ross got ejected in the fourth inning. And you could hear him screaming at this rookie umpire. And it reminded me so much of Aaron Boone when he had the, you know, my guys are savages in the box moment when he was yelling at the umpire, clean it up. What David Ross was yelling at the umpire with a lot of adjectives and other forms of speech involved was be better. I've never seen David Ross that angry. What about you?
Yeah, he was really angry. And again, Buster, the hitters, I think they have every right to complain in this respect. They're up against it anyway with the stuff they're seeing every single night. They have certain nights very little chance to get a hit and, you know, one hit off of Wainwright last night. And then when they're not getting any help with the strike zone and the pitchers are so good today with such spectacular stuff, now you got to fight an umpire and the strike zone. That makes it far, far worse. But and that's why I think people were angry last night. The hitter said, look, we got enough trouble. You can't give us more here.
So Adam Wainwright was terrific last night with help from the strike zone. He did give him credit. He took advantage of it. But he is having a renaissance period in his career, Tim. At the end of 2018, he was really struggling. And I had a great conversation with his brother Trey yesterday about Adam. And he mentioned that, you know, he rode on the team bus with Adam when they were in Chicago at the end of that 2018 season, in which Adam had a 4.46 ERA, made only 8 starts. And Trey acknowledged, like, he didn't know if his brother was just going to decide, you know what, that's it. My performance is regressing. I don't feel great, and I'm done. And he asked Adam, you know, how are you feeling? And Adam was like, I feel good. I feel good physically. I feel like I've worked through some things. And the data I'm getting from the analytical department here with the Cardinals is telling me I've got really good spin rates on all my pitches. And so even at a down moment, he was very hopeful moving forward. Let's face it, a lot of that is competitive arrogance, which, you know, the best pitchers, the best position players all have. But boy, he really has, even at among the five oldest players in baseball, a major factor now for the Cardinals.
Right. And boy, do they need him, Buster. And you're right. He's the fourth oldest player in the major leagues right now. Yadier Molina is the fifth. And I just find it fascinating that those two pitched and caught last night and were both great again. And it just shows you what, you know, understanding of the game is, intelligence, everything else, because those are two of the smartest players you'll ever run into. And to be, you know, as old as they are and do as well as they did last night. And I know you saw this Elias note yesterday. And I'm sure I'm stealing your thunder here, Buster. 28,528 pitches in his career from Wainwright to Yadier Molina going into last night's game. And the next best on that among active is Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner, 22,589. So Wainwright to Molina is the most used battery among active players. And I just thought those numbers were staggering that he's thrown almost 30,000 pitches to Yadier Molina in his career.
And one of the cool stories that I heard from Adam's brother was that the fact that through the years, Yadi and Adam have become really close friends. He said, look, you know, they were teammates for a long time and they were good teammates. He said, but it's been remarkable to watch them really develop a close friendship through the years to the point where their families are hanging out. Adam and Yadi and their families are going to Blues hockey games. You know, they're having get togethers between the families. And I knew that there were conversations between the two guys during the course of the offseason, but I don't think I knew the extent of it, where basically as Yadi and Adam are beginning free agency and deciding what to do, they were collaborating, they were talking, they kind of, you know, they talked about the possibility of other places they might go. But at the root of it was the fact that they want to continue as teammates, you know, 282 starts together.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And just to see how well Yadier has played this year. I know you know this number, Buster, but this is the first year in his career that he's hit seven homers in his first three games of any season. It just kind of shows you that he's getting maybe possibly better offensively, maybe not than 5 or 10 years ago, but he's become a pretty darn good offensive player. And I know he's going to the Hall of Fame someday, but these numbers that he's thrown up here in the last couple of years are really going to help him. Over 2,000 hits now. I mean, he's a dangerous hitter and a really smart hitter who has now understood that, you know, how we play the game today, that you can't hit it through the shift anymore. Because as Ryan Zimmerman told me the other day, with all the data we have, you hit a ground ball, so when there are four guys standing right there to field the ground ball, so you got to hit it over the shift. And Yadier Molina has figured out how to do that.
And I was going to ask, in reference to that great story you wrote last week about all the strikeouts that we have in baseball, I was looking at numbers. I have a piece on ESPN.com today about Molina's career arc as a hitter and some numbers that really jumped out at me. He's never had, Tim, more than 74 strikeouts in any season. And I get it. He's a catcher. He doesn't play as much as some position players, but he plays a lot. Like, he plays a lot for a catcher, and he always has. In the last 15 years, he's never hit lower than 261. It's pretty clear from talking with Skip Schumacher and Eduardo Perez, AJ Ellis, the former catcher, about his approach. They say he doesn't try to do too much. He understands what he's capable of. And the number one thing that he has in mind is he wants to put the ball in play. He's not someone, I think you would agree with me, who you look at him and said, boy, that guy has great hitting skills, which makes me wonder if, boy, could baseball look more like that if hitters decided that they wanted to devote themselves to put the ball in play?
Yeah. And again, my story, Buster, I tend to understand hitters who are, you know, they're taught to not put the ball in play. They're just taught to get the ball up in the air. They're just taught to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And now to ask them to make a complete adjustment is really hard to do. But Look, Yoan Moncada, who's a very good player, Buster, he had 85 called third strikes in 2018. He struck out looking 85 times. And here's Yadier hasn't struck out 75 times in a season swinging or taking. So, yes, there is a way you can make the adjustment, but you have to do it like every night. And you can't do it in the middle of an at bat. These guys just aren't trained to do that. But we're going to have to train them to do that at some point, Buster. Otherwise, the strikeout rates are going to completely go through the roof. We're at 20 games now, Buster, where a team has won a game this year with 15 or more strikeouts and won the game 20 times already. I mean, this is just one of about 50 numbers that I put in that story that just make you slap your head like, this isn't good enough. We need to try something else if this is what's going on.
What were some anecdotes that you dug out during the reporting of that really stuck with you?
Well, I talked to Reggie Jackson, who struck out more times than anyone in history. And he told me, look, I went to the plate all the time trying to hit a home run. But then when I got two strikes, I had to make an adjustment. And he said, even I made the adjustment with two strikes. And he said, but people just don't do that today. And I called Nolan Ryan, who struck out more hitters than anyone in history. And he essentially said the same thing, that back when he pitched, you know, only McCovey, Stargell, maybe Willie Mays, the big power hitters, they didn't make an adjustment with two strikes, whereas everyone else did, because it was embarrassing to strike out then. He said, back when I played, he said, the most embarrassing thing you could do was to rack your own helmet, meaning take it to the bat rack and put it away, as opposed to putting a ball in play and then somebody else puts your helmet away. But he said, we don't care about striking out today. But again, I don't even blame the players for this, Buster. This is what the industry has encouraged them to do. It has incentivized them to do. Put the ball in the air, hit the ball out of the ballpark, and if you strike out 100 times, which, you know, happened 162 times in 2019, and it's going to happen 170 times this year, I mean, that's just where we are, and I think it's too late for a lot of our hitters to make an adjustment. As easy as it may sound, choke up and put it in play. Not that easy.
All right, so there is a ton of scrutiny right now on Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa after what happened last week with your mean Mercedes, where he was openly critical of him for swinging at a pitch on 3-0. Mercedes hit a home run. It kicked off a lot of discussion about old school versus new school and whether or not Tony's thinking was outdated. And people wondering, you know, how are his players feeling about things? There's a lot of people taking note on social media, how it seemed like some of his players are sort of subtweeting him. He was, you know, had a different perspective than Lance Lynn, one of his best pitchers. Well, on the eve of the series that the White Sox played over the weekend against the Yankees, CeCe Sabathia was on his podcast with Ryan Rucco talking about Tony La Russa. Give a listen to this.
This is what I was telling you when they hired him. Like, he's just so out of touch with the game. And most people are, cuz, like, I sit here and watch Christopher Russo on MLB Network. He's out of touch with the game, cuz. Like, Tony La Russa's out of touch with the game, cuz. He should not be managing one of the best teams in the American League, period. The fact that Tim Anderson, basically the captain of their team, had to go on Instagram and step up for his teammate. Like, yeah, the game wasn't over. If you're going to put a position player in there to pitch, guess what? If he's going to lob over the plate, we're going to tee off. Put a 10-run rule up there, cuz. If y'all don't want to see people get embarrassed and you don't want to see position players pitch and people swing on 3-0 counts and all that, then make it a 10-run rule so the game would be over and you don't have these stupid-ass unwritten rules. And now you got a rookie that's basically been carrying your team these last first 6 weeks of the season. This guy's been carrying you. And now you don't have a problem with the weird-ass Minnesota Twins throwing behind one of your biggest hitters? That's stupid. It's stupid, period. I'm sorry. This is terrible. He shouldn't be managing that team. And if you're not going to step up and have your players back, what's the point of being the manager of the White Sox?
So, Tim, I'd say that CeCe Sabathia was definitely passionate about the topic. Yeah. Look, I've done my own reporting on this. I've talked to various people. I do think that Tony needs to step out into the room as much as he can and talk to players as much as he can. This is an important situation right now that needs to be dealt with what is expected to be the best team in the American League Central.
Yes, he has to do that. And I find it odd, Buster, because I'm not sure I've met too many managers in my baseball writing career who spoke to their players more often than Tony La Russa. He would wander around in the outfield during BP, talk to his guys all the time. Great at bat last night, always trying to get the best out of his players by talking to them. And that's probably what he needs to do now. Look, I'm in a bit on the opposite side of this. First off, I would not tell my guy to swing 3-0 there, because I, as the manager, would not want to create anything to anger the other team, okay? And I would never want one of my guys thrown at, and it's not worth it swinging at a 3-0 pitch. So do I have a problem with him swinging 3-0? Absolutely not. When the other team gives up and is throwing a catcher who's throwing 47 miles an hour, then all bets are off, and you can swing away every time on 3-0 for me. I don't care about that. What I do care about is if the manager gives you the take sign and you either don't see it or you ignore it, I'm sorry, this one's on the player. Now, you don't have to like Tony La Russa or the way he handled this afterwards, but the manager gave him a take sign and he disregarded it. You can't do that in this game. And that's what upset Tony La Russa so much. And that's what he's going to have to now understand, is the players run the game these days, not the manager. The manager doesn't have the power and the value that he had 10 years ago when Tony last managed. That's the big difference.
La Russa late in the week was asked about his comments that he made about Mercedes, and he didn't back down at all. And Tim, as I sort of look at the situation and look at the team, you know who I find to be maybe for all practical purposes, who are the most important people in the situation right now? I think it's Tim Anderson, and I think it's Jose Abreu, because I don't see Tony bending over backwards to placate the perception of what his players need. I just don't. You've known him longer than I have, but I think he's made it clear how he feels about this situation, regardless, you know, what his players might be saying behind his back. I don't think that's going to change. And so I think if the White Sox are going to actually handle this, I think it's got to come down to those two clubhouse leaders. You know, if there are players in there not happy with what's being said, not happy with what La Russa is doing, I think it's going to come down to Abreu and Anderson saying, guys, we got a really good team. Let's focus on baseball. What do you think?
Yeah, that's what they're going to have to do. And I think it's got to come from the players. I'm with you. And I think Tony will listen to his star players, because he always has wherever he has been. But back for a second to what Sabathia said, how about the Twins? They give up on this game. It's 15-4. Somebody swings 3-0 against a catcher throwing 47 miles an hour, and then they throw at 95 over his head. I'm not sure I follow that one either. I know all the unwritten rules. I've written that story more than anyone, but I just don't understand when you've given up and then somebody, you know, swings against a catcher throwing 47, whether you should be throwing it behind his head at 95. That's a little tired to me.
Exactly. And by the way, you and I both love CeCe. When I heard him talking about this and sort of the new rules, how many times did we get CC get angry at someone who tried to bunt on him?
Yeah, that was not out of character for CC Sabathia, because when somebody did something wrong, unwritten rules of the game, he took it on as a player. That's for sure.
Exactly. All right. Before you go, I want to ask you about the Dodgers and Padres, who I think in an interesting way have underscored the reality that they're probably the best teams in baseball. The Dodgers have had all these injuries, and guess what? All they're doing right now is winning. We've seen guys like Gavin Lux step up and play well. The Padres had all those players, Fernando Tatis Jr., Eric Hosmer, Will Myers out because of the COVID situation, and they never stopped winning. And both of these teams, and now the Padres are getting some of their guys back, and both of these teams absolutely crushing opponents these days.
Yeah, I would be really worried if I'm a National League team, that these two teams have gone through what they have gone through, and now they're both red hot again, found a way to win without Cody Bellinger, found a way to win without Fernando Tatis Jr. How great is that guy, by the way? 11 for 14 since he came back from COVID. It's ridiculous. Those are the two best teams in the National League. They might be the two best teams in baseball. And it's just so impressive how both of those teams have righted the ship with all sorts of things going on. And they're only going to get better from here. And I can't wait to see where October leads these two teams. It's too bad they're in the same division, because that would make a tremendous NLCS final. But I don't think they can get there because one's going to be a wild card team.
You and I talked a little bit last week about Gavin Lux. We've heard for years about his talent, and he's got some swag, Tim. Like, he may not have Fernando Tatis Jr. swag, but you can see the confidence in his game. And it may be one of the best things that happened to the Dodgers during these injuries, the fact that they were put in a position where, because Corey Seager went out, they had to put Gavin Lux out there, and he is responding, maybe for the first time on a more consistent basis as a big leaguer.
Right, and he might have heard people saying, hey, it's time for you to start to hit, even though it's a very small sample. And he said, all right, I'll start to hit. He's got two grand slams in this season. I mean, Derek Jeter had one grand slam in his career. This guy's got two since he started taking over here. And maybe this is the Gavin Lux we heard about all those years as top prospect in the Dodger system.
All right, Tim, thank you.
All right, get out of the car, Buster, and drive home.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
In preparation for Sunday Night Baseball, I did a rapid-fire interview with Nolan Arenado of the St. Louis Cardinals. Give a listen.
Who was the third baseman you loved to watch when you were growing up, and why?
Probably have to go with Adrian Beltre. Just being from California, he was with the Dodgers, and I saw him when he was young there, and just the style of play he had, and obviously a Gold Glover, a great hitter, and then his health and just how long he stayed in the game and played at a high level. He's just someone that I always followed and I was able to talk to about the game a little bit. It's something that I really enjoyed those conversations. I'll always remember that time being able to talk to, one of the greatest to ever do it.
What do you remember about the first time you got to talk to him?
A little nervous talking to Adrian Beltre, but like super down to earth, and he's an open book. You can ask him whatever you want. And I think that's the best thing about him, man. You always look at figures as like these guys that, they're a little standoffish or something, but Adrian was not like that. He's like super open, loved to talk about the game. He was willing to talk about the game, and just a good family man. And it was awesome.
Game 7 of the World Series, two outs, bottom of the ninth, potential winning runs on base. How would you rather end it? Hit a home run or a diving stop and a cannon throw?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I got to go home run. Hitting so hard now. These pitchers are so good that if you can hit a homer off these guys late in the game and these relievers, you gotta pick that.
When you made that crazy tarp play in San Francisco, what was the coolest reaction you got from one of your peers?
Well, I got a few. I don't know about specific players, but I got a lot of texts from players from opposing teams just saying that was one of the greatest catches I've ever seen. Much respect for you for playing hard. A lot of that stuff stuck with me. I think Buster even texted me too, and we were playing against the Giants. So just stuff like that. It meant a lot. It was just cool to get that reaction. And, I didn't know people were paying attention like that, but it was great to see it. It was great to get those texts from those guys, some of the best in the game.
You're known for being hyper-competitive. What was your greatest victory not related to baseball?
Man, like you said earlier, the Colorado, the Rockies shot in the basketball tournament there was pretty cool. Probably ping pong or wiffle ball with my cousins. We played ping pong in the garage and it gets super competitive, and just winning those tournaments, those tournaments that we used to create pools and stuff like that, just winning those. Cause I feel like I was the better one. So I was expected to win. So to be able to do it, it felt even better.
You're known for your great throwing arm. Whose infield throwing arm do you love to watch now?
man, there's some good arms out there. You know, Machado has a great arm. He's very easy. He makes it look very easy when he throws across the diamond. I'd probably go with Machado as far as, like, not a lot of effort, and the ball just kind of gets across really easily.
Give me an example of Yadi Molina's preparation.
Oh, incredible. Just incredible preparation. I mean, example, spring training, my first year in Florida spring, and we're there, and, you know, the first day I'm like, I'm going to get there early, you know, just to kind of set the example that, you know, I need to be the guy that gets there early and show these guys that I'm all in. And Yadi was already there blocking balls at like 6:15 in the morning or something like that. It was just absurd. I'm like, what? This guy's 30 something years old and he's out there catching, you know, blocking balls with all the young rookie catchers in big league camp. And, you know, and it wasn't like he just did that for one day. He did that like almost every single day. I was just in awe of him. I couldn't believe it. And it made me realize that you better get to the field and get to work, because if Yadi's doing it, then you need to.
Nolan, what'd you say to him when you saw him?
I didn't say anything. I was just in awe. I was just looking at him like, man, I can't believe this guy. This guy's incredible. He was my locker mate too. So we just talked about the game, but I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot to say. I think you just watch it and you just realize like, all right, this is the level and this is the expectation.
What are your first impressions about the Cubs and Cardinals rivalry?
Well, obviously it's a big one. You know, I think, you know, it's one of the bigger ones in the game. Just to be a part of it, it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I've always enjoyed going to Wrigley. And, you know, those fans are really intense. And like I said, I'm just happy to be on this side. And hopefully we can take care of business.
We've got all this conversation going on about baseball's unwritten rules, old school versus new school. Where would you put yourself in terms of what camp and why?
I think I would go put myself in the old school. You know, I don't, as far as the unwritten rules, you know, I don't know much about that. I think my style of play is just more old school. You know, I that's kind of how I was taught from Todd and Tulo and Cargo, you know, just to kind of put your head down and keep your work, you know, keep working, you know, don't try to ask for too much attention. That was the way I was taught. I have no problem with the new school. I love these young players. I love the way they play. I love the excitement they bring. They bring so much energy. But for me personally, that's just not me. You know, I wish I could do it. It's just not who I am. So I just try to tend toward the old school, I guess.
What do you think when you see all these no-hitters?
I mean, you know, it's tough. You know, as a hitter, you don't want to see it. But, you know, these pitchers are good. And it just seems like some of them are just even better than what they were. And I don't know what's going on. But I think the analytics of the game and a lot of the shifts and all that, it's all catered toward pitching. And not only are these guys really good on the mound, you know, the defense has shifted right where they needed them, you know, and all those little things. So I think the pitchers definitely have the advantage. And, you know, I don't want to see it as a hitter, but at the same time, you have to give credit to these pitchers for just being able to stay locked in. And, you know, it's hard to no-hit these teams, and especially teams that you face multiple times. It's impressive. Like Kluber's was, you know, he was just with the Rangers, and it's pretty impressive to do those things. So you have to give credit where credit's due, but, you know, as a hitter, you want to see some hits.
Nolan, this is great. Thank you. Perfect.
No, I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Tony La Russa spoke with Roxy Bernstein of ESPN Radio on Saturday. Give a listen to that.
All right, Jim, with the skipper of the Chicago White Sox, Tony La Russa. And Tony, it's been 10 years since you were managing in a dugout. You had jobs in front offices working for Major League Baseball. What was it about the Chicago White Sox and this opportunity that pulled you back into the dugout and managing a ball club?
Well, being upstairs, I did get an appreciation for how hard that front office job is. It's all year long. Appreciate scouting, player development, but, you know, my experience was down in the dugout, and when you're upstairs, everybody feels helpless once the game starts. And the only way to get back and you know, be part of the competition was to come downstairs. And I got this ridiculously fortunate opportunity that any manager would want to come into a ball club that's just ready to compete and have a chance to play in October. So, you know, being upstairs and not being in the action, having a chance to get back, couldn't pass it up.
Well, you mentioned the talent this ball club has. You've managed some great teams over the years. You've won World Series in Oakland and St. Louis. I'm not going to ask you to compare this team to those teams, but does this team have that kind of potential and that drive that your championship ball clubs have had in the past?
Well, I like the way you put it, because you said this and that. You know, you have to start with talent, and you got to work that talent into skills, but you have to have that drive. You know, if all you want to do is just generate some stats and make some money, and maybe you win a championship, But you have to have that mission, the goal to be a champion. And I do believe that this team, the group of guys here, definitely compare to the A's and the Cardinals in the sense that it's real talent throughout the roster. And they, you know, they want to play in October and see how far they can go.
Certainly has been an interesting week for your clubhouse with what happened early in the week. But it seems like everything is kind of blown over. What's your read on the way your clubhouse is right now?
You know, here's the better thing. Ask the players, because I know what their answer is going to be. And, you know, sometimes you just got to ignore the clutter and the noise. I just saw a stat that somebody gave me this morning that actually ESPN put out. In 20 years, when games with 10-run lead, I don't know if you saw it or not, 550 hitters, nobody had ever swung. Why? And
yeah.
I said that, and the implication is that it's been wrong for 20 years. There's sportsmanship. There's respect. And the thing that bugs me the most is, and this is what I explained to the team, if you take 3-0, what's going to happen 3-1, 3-2 with a guy on the mound, specific player? He ain't going to trick you. All you're doing is paying respects to a team that's having a tough day. Our club understands that. And I know from the comments that they made to me and we're making together that, you know, we've got a good clubhouse and I'm very fortunate to be part of this team. They inspire me.
Thanks for the time, Tony. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Already, Buster, Bleacher Tweets on a Monday. First up, we have John Tolender at John Tolender. He writes in, will Tony La Russa finish the year as White Sox manager? And do you think the Sox regret not hiring a guy like Alex Cora, who seemed to be a great fit for them? A lot of animosity for Tony La Russa in my mentions, especially as they got swept by the Yankees this weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah, I think he'll finish the year as the White Sox manager unless he were to decide for whatever reason to step away. Do I think that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the White Sox, regrets hiring Tony La Russa? No. And we've talked about how loyal Jerry Reinsdorf is, and he wanted this to happen, so I don't think he has regrets. Do I think there are people in the White Sox organization who wish that they had A.J. Hinch to be their man as their manager or maybe Alex Cora? Yeah. There absolutely are those people.
Next up, we have JRW at GoFungo Yourself. Interesting handle there, JRW. He writes in, hey, Buster, why no discussion about lowering the mound instead of moving it back? It's worked before, and it's a more subtle change.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I was actually, it's a great point. I was thinking about that over the weekend. And, you know, pitchers, it would not be as radical of a change. They throw on flat ground all the time. And you're right. You know, when they lowered the mound after the 1969 season, the offensive numbers made a big comeback. And maybe that's going to be one of the possibilities that's discussed after the season. I know this, they're going to talk about everything because it's really ugly out there.
Indeed. Last one for today. Nick Lurkins at Banker DJ Nick. So banker by day, DJ by night. Nick writes in, Cards pitching is thinning. Is it time to consider going after Mad Bum or Scherzer?
They got to go after somebody. Look, the injury to Michaelis the other day is a huge concern because they already really don't have a lot of depth in their rotation. And from what I understand, there's not a lot of prospects ready to go in the minor league level. So it's not like they're the Tampa Bay Rays and have, you know, option D, C, you know, B, A, all the way behind the front guys in the rotation. I do think they're going to have to go out and make a trade. You know, I was kind of thinking about Taylor. It's going to make you cringe a little bit. John Means would be an excellent guy. I know, but I mean, the Orioles are clearly in rebuild mode. They're not going to be, he's not going to be in the organization by the time they contend. He would be a guy from the Cardinals I'm calling about.
All right, Buster.
We'll just play to the Orioles, right?
Yeah, seriously. We'll leave it at that for today. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And shout out to Maryland Baseball, number 25. They won 6 series in a row going into the last week of the regular season. Had to shout them out with our guy Timmy on the podcast today. Thanks, everyone.
Very nice. That's it for today. My thanks to Nolan Arenado, to Tim, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.